C1M, number 7B.
That's the second epitome, the second state. Good. Is that clear? Well, I repeat it again. These are deep facts which never should leave us since the end of our life, you see. So it doesn't matter if we repeat them, because we should repeat them morning, noon, and night. It's our being. And it's well to be conscious of. It shows this. Inwardly in us, in every one of us, is a longing that our manhood, that our life is gaining a higher and higher tone. That our life and that our human happiness and living becomes richer and broader and wider. Well, that's a wish, but how to get it? How to get it? Well, here it is shown. Here it is shown that it is the outcome of the first and second chapter. How? So I take the connection between the three chapters in the second tone. What did we have in prayer at the second chapter? We had that prayer of gratitude for the good, that prayer of worshipping and loving the good, because that state, that attitude can bring unfoldment. He showed there that if you are grateful for the good already received, that will enable us to receive more. So it was that prayer of worshipping the good, of being grateful for the good, because this good can be unfolded. Well, that's nice. But if in order to fulfill that prayer, we need atonement and Eucharist, which in the second subject came in and said, all right, but this demands that you turn away from that which is evil. That it demands, if you want to worship good, you can't turn to evil. If you want to worship good, you have to turn away from all that is unlike God good. And so that second subject in Atonement Eucharist asks us to turn away from that which is unlike God good, so that we may be bound more and more to the imperishable things of spirit. If you recall those subjects, you know, as we go on and go on, we must have them present. The main subject we must have present. They are our pillars of life. They are our structure. Just as we like to have our nose and our eyes and our liver and our stomach present with us where we go and don't like to miss them, we must have the true structure of manhood with us in consciousness. So, this demands, you see, that worship, the prayer of worshipping good, demands in the Atonement Eucharist to turn away from that which is evil, and to bind ourselves more and more to the imperishable things of spirit. The more I bind myself to the imperishable things of spirit, the more I oust out of my consciousness, the more I reject out of my thought and my feeling that which tries to turn towards evil, the more I make room for spiritual things. The more I fulfill atonement and Eucharist, the more I inherit the infant Christianity. I inherit marriage. The more, therefore, I inherit the things of spirit, which are spiritual qualities, spiritual affection. And so the purer and purer I become, that's quite natural. And the purer and purer I become, the better spiritual qualities blend and blend in one infinite calculus. Because the moment a quality is spiritual, it blends with every other quality. There's no more restriction. Now, once again, just get the rhythm. Prayer says, I speak about the second subject. Prayer says, well, worship that which is good. Take in that which is good. But in order to take in that which is good so that it can be unfolded, Atonement Eucharist comes and says, but then you must turn away from that which is evil, from that which is unlike God. And you must oust out of your consciousness and reject of your consciousness all that is unlike God and just always turn towards the imperishable things of spirit. That's how it ended. Well, in the measure, now comes the comparative, the third subject, as a third chapter. In the measure, as I do that, in that measure, the things of spirit become more and more real, more and more tangible in me, and more I feel that the spiritual qualities, the qualities of the heart, the qualities of goodness, the qualities of pure affection become predominant in me, real in me, realer in me. And you don't say realer, more real in me, more real in me. And so it takes up more place in me and more place in me. And the purer things become in me, the more they blend. We come to the reflection of spirit. So we can say, the more I'm one with spirit through those stages of prayer and atonement and Eucharist, the more I radiate spiritual qualities. And therefore, the more I purify the universe. I become a purifying effect on the universe. Can you see that? Or, if we take it in its Christianity sense of being the creator of spiritual universe, I can say, as I become through prayer and atonement and Eucharist one with spirit, spirit does something to me, has an effect. Christianity is always the effect. It brings out in me more and more the true, fine, good, virtuous qualities of pure affection. Where the affections are purified, where they are no more mingled with material affection, sensual affection, and so on. Where they are purified. And as spirit brings out in me more and more, through the first two steps, you see, the first two chapters, a purer and purer mentality and outlook and affection, the more it makes me to contribute to the completeness of man's nature. The more I become man and woman in one, the more the qualities blend in me and therefore I contribute to the unity of manhood and womanhood in me. Well, I just feel these are things to think over, to ponder over. The long evening nights are so nice for that. Now we go to the third subject. I'm pretty good with my time now. The third. Let us go through it in the same rhythm. First we ask ourselves, what has God joined together which man shouldn't put asunder? And the third subject says, well, it is the sense, the qualities of selflessness, that quality of blending the interests into one interest. What mortals like to pull to pieces, what God has joined together, is that we feel that each one has his own interest, and that each one fights like an animal for his own interest, for his own self, for his own survival. But what God has joined together is that God has only one interest, And therefore we must see that the egotism has no place in that one interest, and that selflessness must take place, which sees his own good in the other's good. That selflessness which has a unity of interest, one interest, and works for that one interest and supports that one interest. That's the tone that comes out here. You see, it's quite a different tone again. But the first thing I would state again, maybe a bit ridiculous, but it doesn't matter. See, I would love to see that one is quite sure that these subjects are as different as a lily from a rose. That the first subject is so different from what the second subject says. They appeal to quite different qualities than the second subject. And so does the third subject appeal to quite different qualities and outlook. The third is that which appeals to that unity of interest, to that wideness of horizon which sees that the whole being is the interest of everyone. That there is no room in that one interest for narrowness, for littleness, for restriction, for possessiveness, for mistrust, for jealousy, and so on. She deals here with all these aspects that she asks for an altruistic outlook, for a wide outlook, for the enlarging of the horizon, you see, of one's outlook, and is dead against that smallness of mind and littleness of mind and narrowness of mind, of confining people to a place, to a job, to an activity, to an ability, to confine people to one relation, to confine and confine. It is dead against selfishness and egotism and self-centeredness and all these things, you see. It demands to that selflessness in us, which doesn't look anymore at self and sense, but looks to the one interest, the advancement of the spiritual idea, naturally. That's the biggest interest. Now, that she brings out in many ways. She speaks about this unselfishness and a lot about mutuality. Perhaps you have felt that, but it's a lot about mutuality. Well, mutuality is naturally combining one's interest into one big interest, of subordinating one's own interest to the one big interest, to the one big purpose. So, what God has joined together is here that we should wed ourselves to selflessness, or in another way, to wed ourselves to one big interest, the unity of spirit, the unity of interest and affection. Doing that, he says that what God has joined together has an effect of life and truth. Here life is depicted as prolonging and maintaining. It shows here that as we unite our heart and our soul, and our feeling, and our action, and our thought, and our mind, with the one selfless interest, that has a prolonging effect on our happiness and joy of our life. I'm told that even worms act to that law. That if one takes worms and separates them and let them live by their own, not in community, not in union, that they don't live very long. That they live much longer if they are together. Well, I wouldn't be surprised. And that's why they say bachelors don't live as long statistically as married people. So I get a bit married now. You see, behind it, if it's worms or if it's married people or bachelors, there is a law. There is a law behind it which is divine and which says that we contract our life, that we rob us of our life if we are narrow, contracted in our outlook. But if our outlook is wide and big, is united, has a wide horizon, takes in all that is in life, that we have more life. It's quite natural. So unselfishness, which is wide and big, really takes part in the prolonging not only of our happiness, but of our life. And that's what she says. It prolongs life and happiness and health. It maintains health. And so, well, we know that. We know that from the practice, that egoistic people, jealous people and so on, that they are not so healthy as unselfish people. Well, why is it? There we find these big, enormous laws, you see, which regulate not only the people, but worms and flowers and everything. So it's everywhere the same. So, and it does prolong and maintain what? The tone of truth here, you may have noticed, is very different again from the preceding one. Here she speaks about each partner. It's always partnership. It's always, it's always partners. Says it does good to each one of those taking part in the relationship. She speaks about wife or husband, not and, wife or husband, bride or lover, both sides, each of the partner, for each other. See, it's always showing that those who benefit from it is everyone, individual. With soul, you always get the individual manhood. You remember that in the days of creation, truth of soul is the individual manhood. Here she shows the same. You know, if I naturally had 10 hours for 1 hour, I could show you the correlations which are so exact all over the textbook. It's enormous. But I just can't. But I'm glad. I'm quite glad I can't, because I let you do that for yourself, and you find it out for yourself, and it comes to you in an individual way, and that gives you a kick and joy. So let us summarize here. So what does she say? She says, wedding ourselves to a selfless attitude, to an attitude of mutual interest, of common interest, one interest, of identifying our interest with one interest. Doing that has which effect? It has the effect of maintaining and prolonging the happiness and life of each partner. Not only of one, of each partner, of each concerned in a community or relationship or whatever is in question. Now, let's see how this, how this unfolds through the three first chapters. I go again through the third subject of the first, second, and third chapters to see the connection between them. What was it in prayer? In prayer, we had that prayer of sincerity, which is necessary for a reformation. itself. And unless there is sincerity in prayer, there will be no reformation. There will be no change in us. At home in the Eucharist comes and says, all right, but this sincerity demands a proof, namely that you really are going to rebuke sin, and that you really are going the way from sense to soul. And we had in that passage all that perseverance and pursuing that way from sense to soul. You remember? You must remember. So, this sincerity of prayer, which leads to reformation, demands in the atonement and Eucharist that we stick to this way from sense to soul, that we stick and mean business about this sincerity, and go that way from sense to soul unwaveringly. Unwaveringly. Well, what is the outcome of that? The outcome of that is quite rational, quite logical. The more I part from sense, the more through perseverance, through sticking to that way, I part from sense and self, and I bind myself more and more to the sense of soul, to soul sense, to the spiritual self. The more I become selfless, that's quite clear. Well, that's what she says here, that in the third subject in marriage, it is the selflessness which is brought out in us, and this brings me more and more to that sense of an altruistic, wide outlook. So again, we get the effect of atonement and Eucharist. The effect of the Christ idea is Christianity. Marriage is that word as Christianity. The effect of the word as the Christ. The word as the Christ says, go away from sin. Go towards soul. Stick to soul. Be perseverant in that course. Well, the more I do that, the more. See, that's the transitional stage. The more. That's the transitional stage. In the measure as I do that, the more I do that, the more I become selfless. I become free of self. The self becomes less and less. And therefore, I become more and more unselfish. I become more and more altruistic in my outlook. The more and more I see one interest as the whole interest. So, as this is brought out in me, that selflessness, I know that this brings into action the law of marriage, namely that one seed brings out another seed, that this seed of selflessness brings out life and truth, brings out a maintaining and prolonging of all that is good and true and happy and fine in each one. Therefore, it brings out a higher sense of manhood because it brings out a prolonged and maintained sense of good humanhood. That's an achievement. That's something positive. So I really can say in that the more I become one with soul through prayer and atonement and Eucharist, the more I become selfless and therefore contribute towards stabilizing, securing and preserving, maintaining, prolonging joy and happiness in each one. Or, put another way, can say, in the measure as I become one with soul, soul has an effect on me. Soul brings out in me a sense of selflessness, a sense of wanting to find my interest to be identical with anybody's interest, wanting to find one common interest, and this makes me to contribute to the world something. It makes me to contribute to everyone's individual mission. Now she says there in that third subject that through mutual support we should support each individual in that united sphere. And so I like that attitude. It's a sense of fatherhood, sense of attitude that comes in, which says, if I look away from my own interests, if I wed myself to the one big interest which really matters, then I not only help myself, then I not only maintain my own individuality, but then I help and I contribute to the individuality of each other. I begin to maintain and prolong the life and joy and mission and duty of everyone else. And we know we do. We know we do. These are things I think one just can't easily talk about them, because one must experience them here and there, either positively or negatively. They always show themselves. If they don't show them positively, they show themselves certainly negatively. So they prove the law which Mrs. Eddy has somehow discovered here, and which shows itself time and time again.